And joining us now on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs, is the play-by-play voice of the World Series champion Kansas City Royals, Ryan LaFever. Ryan, how you doing, man?
Good, Wade. Good morning.
And good morning. Thanks for taking the time to join us today on the Sports Ticket. How are things going in Houston? I would guess a little bit better now that the Royals split the first two.
Yeah, this has been a tough place for the Royals. And the Royals have really, in the last 2 years, have won, well, they won one regular season game and then, of course, that miracle playoff game. But it's just been a tough place for them to play. The Astros are they're a really good team. I mean, they do everything. They hit for power. They have speed. They have good starting pitching. Their defense is very good. They're very athletic. They play to their ballpark very well. So, any win here over the last couple of years is big, because this is a very tough place to win, not just for the Royals, but the Astros last year tied the Blue Jays for the best home record in the American League. So they beat up everybody here.
Do you think the Astros are the biggest challenger to the Royals in the American League?
I would say right now, yeah, I think that's accurate. I think, looking at other teams that will be right there at the end, if they can stay healthy, I think the Blue Jays are going to be tough again. And like the Astros, I mean, they're just really hard to beat in their ballpark. A lot of people who are really close to the situation think that the Rangers have a good chance of going deep. You know, they're a very balanced team as well. From a distance, the Rangers weren't really supposed to be there last year, so it's easy to just write them off as a fluke. And, you know, they're not as talented as, they don't have as much star power, I guess, as some other teams in the league. But teams that really follow the division closely and follow the Rangers closely feel like that they've got a legitimate shot. But, the Astros, they have it all. The only thing that they don't have is experience. And, you know, think about this. The Royals have a chance to go to the World Series 3 years in a row, and I think their chances are enhanced because of going the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. But if they lost the wild card game 2 years ago, which they should have, mm-hmm. and they lost game four of the division series last year, which they should have, you know, this would be a team that, hey, they've been to the playoffs back-to-back years, but they haven't been past the first round.
Right.
And so, there's just an unknown, because the deeper you go into the playoffs, you know, the more pressure that comes with it. And so that's really the only thing that's missing for the Astros, because, they're a real scary team to play.
You know, fans get spoiled by winning. You see it with KU men's basketball. I see it with K-State football, Nebraska football. You could go on and on and on. And, you know, the Patriots are spoiled by winning in the National Football League. And certainly Royals fans, after 29 years of misery, as some people would put it, they have been spoiled and deserve to be spoiled here the last couple of years. And the reason I bring that up is I was talking to some Royals fans here in North Central Kansas, and I was talking to them after the Astro game the other night when the Royals got beat pretty handily. And I told them, I said, listen, Houston can win all four of these games. I'm okay with it, because we got the one that we really, really needed, which was game four last year. I'll trade a few losses this year to make sure that we make it out of that round of the playoffs a year ago.
Yeah, and I was talking to a member of the Royals staff yesterday on the field, and he was commenting how much winning the World Series and, you know, being to the World Series in back-to-back years, how much it's just benefited the psyche of this team. And the point was, you know, if they don't get back, you know, if they don't get back to the top of the division early, and they don't dominate the division early like they did last year, that's probably not going to be that big of a deal, because these guys, they understand now what it takes. You know, they know who they are, they know who they are not, and just the ease that comes with, they've done it twice. You know, if they had gone to Game 7 in 2014 and then didn't make it back to the playoffs last year, well, then it's like, well, maybe we just got hot for a few weeks there. You know, maybe that's not really who we are. But, you know, they got so close, and then they won it, that everyone just seems to sense unease with this team. So that when they lose 8-2 in the opener like they did, and clearly were outplayed by the Astros. I mean, if you'd been in the southern tip of Chile the last 10 years and weren't following baseball at all, and then you came back and you watched the Astros and the Royals play two nights ago, you'd think, wow, I mean, the Astros are the World Series champs, right? I mean, that was that game wasn't even close. But, you know, they won. They know they're going to have their ups and downs. And, you know, they not only they come back and win the next night, but they get three runs in the first inning. The pitching, you know, pitches the Astros tough. I didn't think that was going to be a 3-2 game at the end of one. I thought that was going to be a 10-7 game or something like that. But, you know, it's little things that you really have to pay close attention to. But for me, that really speaks to what that staff member said yesterday. And this was before the game even started. Mm-hmm. To just come back and win a game like that when the Astros appeared to have the Royals on the ropes on a few occasions. But, you know, there's just a calmness about them because, you know, they know where they're headed. They know where they've been. And, you know, that really kind of changes the momentum of the series.
Ryan Lefevre, the play-by-play voice of the Kansas City Royals, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. Let's go back a little ways to spring training. I had some friends that went down to Surprise. Describe kind of what you saw, because it's like the Royals became a group of rock stars in a way. I mean, they set a new attendance record in one of the spring training games. A lot of Royals fans went out there, called a vacation, and they would go not just the one spring training game. They would travel with the Royals there in Arizona, whatever the case may be. Just talk about the following of Royals fans now, because it seems to be pretty rabid.
Yeah, I mean, it was different. It was, you know, just not the amount of people, but who was there. I mean, every Kansas City connected celebrity seemed to be there at some point during spring training, because everyone wants a piece of this team. You know, Rob Riggle's there one day. The next day, Tom Watson is there. The next day, you know, the mayor is there. The next day, Hector Ortiz is there. I mean, it's just one thing after another. And I think they handle it well. I tell you, wait, I never bought into, and I haven't heard from anyone within the Royals to, you know, prove me otherwise, but I never bought into, you know, the Royals go to the World Series in 14 and Pecota predicts them to win, you know, whatever, 74, 75 games. And, oh, they had a chip on their shoulder that they're going to prove them wrong. And that really fueled them. I don't buy that. Mm-hmm. The team that I saw in spring training this year was the same team I saw in spring training in 2013, when really this all began. They finished 10 games above 500 that year. They didn't make it to the playoffs, but that's really when they became a winning team and believed that they could be a winning team. So it was just a very, you know, Royals-like spring training. I didn't notice, you know, you didn't have like a Yoenis Cespedes showing up in a, you know, different hot rod every day.
That's what you do, right? That's what you do.
That was my role.
Right,
that was my
role. With your bling.
It's just not the personality of this team. And, you know, what fueled this team was that they wanted to win a World Series. And maybe you and I talked about this last year, but I don't know how you could possibly be more motivated than the Royals were last year. I mean, if the Royals had gone to the wild card game and lost, they would have been disappointed, but you could say, okay, fine, the 29-year drought is over. They're a playoff team. If they got to the first round and they lost to the Angels, you'd say, well, the Angels won 98 games, but, you know, hey, the Royals got past the wild card. You know, that's a feather in their cap. You know, they've gone deeper into the playoffs. If they beat the Angels and they lost to the Orioles in the championship series, well, the Orioles won 96 games. Gosh, they got past the Angels. I mean, you know, good season, great accomplishment, something to build on. And if they got to the World Series and let's say they lost to the Giants in 5 games, you could say, wow, they got to the World Series. Mm-hmm. But they got to Game 7 with the tying run 90 feet away. And what I found interesting, because I felt the same way, is when players were asked, coaches were asked, and in particular, I saw a quote from Eric Hosmer. Somebody asked, does winning the World Series take some or all of the frustration away from losing the World Series the year before? And most people have answered, and Hosmer was the one where I read the quote. He says, no, it makes it worse, because now we could be talking about back-to-back World Series. And I've had guys tell me that is a pain that will never go away. Even if they win it again this year,
sure, that's
a pain that will never go away. So really, there's no scenario where they could have been more motivated, where you get so close. I mean, you can taste it, and it's not there, and another team is celebrating on your field. So that's where the motivation came from, and I think that's been the motivation from the very beginning when these guys started playing together in the minor leagues. But I really don't think, I think they laugh at it more than anything else when someone predicts them to finish third or fourth, or Pecota says they won't even have a winning record this year. I don't that's a nice story, but I don't think there's any truth to it. So long answer to your short question, it was just another Royal spring training where the goal, you know, the goal was the same this year as it was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, just the following was a little bit different, but on the field it was the same.
There were just more people watching it, that's all.
There you go. Ryan LaFever, the voice of the Royals, with us today on the Sports Ticket. So let's talk about this team. Wade Davis, first of all, I love his first name. It's a great first name. Wade Davis, you know, it's interesting. I've been watching him very closely. I was there for opening night, and I watched him pitch there. And I've been the radar gun. I know you note it at times during your broadcast, whether you're on the radio or television. Sometimes it can tell you something about a guy. Obviously, guy's velocity. We saw it quite a bit with Holland. You could tell he was down in his velocity, and something wasn't quite right, and it just got worse. And then found out that he had the elbow injury, and then he's now a free agent, and he's out for probably the entire season and reconstructive surgery on the elbow. And I've been watching Wade Davis, and I really, really, this is the first thing I want to ask you today, because he's not as dominant as he was last year when he became the closer, or even when he was eighth inning guy the last couple of years. And it's hard to be as dominant. I get that over time, and maybe some hitters adjust. But it seems to me, and maybe I'm wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, but that maybe he's not, I don't know if this is the right word, but like last night when I watched him against the Astros, I know they have a dangerous lineup. And I don't know if it's Perez, the way he's calling the game, but it seems like Wade is not quite challenging the hitters quite as much as he did here the last couple of years. Or is it just a matter of he's just trying to feel things out? It's early in the season. We shouldn't read too much into it, because I've noticed the velocity on his fastball, at least on the radar gun and on television, shows that it's a little bit down, not a lot, but a little bit from the last year or two.
Well, he said after the game last night that he's going through a little bit of a dead arm period. And what that means is there are times during the season, and it's usually early in the season. If it's not spring training, it's the first month when a pitcher is getting their arm back into pitching shape, mm-hmm. that, you know, those muscles start to, you know, they start to fire again, and they start to you know, build up lactic acid and then flush the acid out. That it's just like a runner, you know, who runs often, or a weightlifter. You know, there are just some days where you just don't feel as strong. Your legs feel heavy when you're running, or your arms don't feel strong when you're lifting weights. It's the same for a pitcher. The body's just readjusting to the workload that these guys put on their arms. And so that explains part of it. And I also think that he has more weapons to work with, so he doesn't have to rely solely on his fastball. I noticed what you noticed is, you know, his fastball last night was 94-95 when mm-hmm. it seems like it's, you know, normally 96-97. But he has, you know, he has so many weapons. I mean, it's like a guy, you know, going into a street fight with a machine gun, mm-hmm. you know, a machete and a grenade.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you know, the machine gun, you know, is not as accurate as it used to be, but that's okay because he's got a machete and a grenade. You know,
right.
I mean, he's just, if his fastball is not 96-97, he's got that cut fastball, he's got that curveball. I mean, he really gives the hitter a lot of different looks. I mean, they really can't just hone in on one pitch. So he doesn't seem to be concerned with it. And unless the pitcher is injured, which he isn't, then it's just a little period. You know, Edinson Volquez went through it in spring training. He had a dead arm period, and he's been great in his first two starts. So that's probably why you're seeing what you're seeing. I did notice, though, that, and I don't remember the exact situation, I think he got one out last night, and then I think back-to-back walks.
Mm-hmm.
So Jose Altuve came up, and it looked like Wade just said, you know, to heck with it. And his first pitch to Altuve, he just looked like he reached back and threw it as hard as he could down the middle,
yep.
to Altuve, who fouled it away. And it was just kind of like, you know, enough of this. You know, let's just get the job done here. And, you know, you got to fly out in a strikeout to end the inning.
It was good to see him in the handshake line afterwards. You guys got a great shot on television of him just taking a deep breath and exhaling. And then there was a smile, kind of like one of those frustrated smiles that you see from time to time, knowing that, hey, I didn't have my best stuff, but we still got the W. And that's one thing that Wade Davis is so good at, that when he does get into jams, and of course we saw it at its premium in the ALCS against the Blue Jays when the Royals clinched, that he can get into a jam and he can work his way out of it, and there's not a lot of pitchers in his situation that can do that.
Right, and Rex Hudler talks a lot about body language as a hitter, you know, just looking at the pitcher's body language, and it gives the hitter some confidence if they feel like the guy is questioning himself. And so a strength of a good pitcher is that you can't read how they're feeling on the outside. And so, you know, here's Wade Davis, and he mentioned, you know, he you know, explains after the game the dead arm and fighting his mechanics, but his demeanor didn't change at all. And so if you're a hitter, you're thinking, oh, okay, man, he's off a little bit, but he sure doesn't, you know, and it, looking at his eyes, he doesn't look as though he's off. And sure enough, you know, he gets through the inning, and then here comes the exhale, here comes the smile. You know, that's the acknowledgement that, man, I really didn't have it like I normally do tonight, but, you know, he still got the job done. So that is not a part of his effectiveness that should be overlooked. I mean, that's a big part of who he is, that a hitter just, they can't read from him that, you know, he may not be right, and so they're constantly going to be on the defensive.
I definitely would not want to sit down with him at a poker table. There's just no way. I mean, that guy would be really good at bluffing, I think.
He's one of my favorite guys on the team. He's really interesting to talk with. You know, his first couple of years here, being quiet-natured as he is, you know, he's just not one to come up and start a conversation. But, you know, over time, as he's gotten comfortable with Kansas City and all that are connected with the Royals and travel with the Royals, I've gotten a chance to know him, and he's an interesting guy to talk to, but he's not like a, you know, like an ultra intellectual where, you right. know, he's overthinking things on the mound. I mean, he has a plan, but some guys you talk to and it almost turns into science, and
yes.
you're like, you know, it shouldn't be that complicated. I mean, but just, you know, about baseball and about life and you know, current issues in the world. And I mean, he has that same, you know, very calm, thoughtful demeanor. You know, he's a good listener, and you know, all that stuff plays well, you know, circles back to why he's so successful on the mound.
Are you concerned about the starting rotation? I know it's only seven games in, and when you look at the statistics, ERA's good, had good starts from everybody in the rotation. But the reason I bring this up, and I'm sure you've talked about it many times with various people that have asked you about it, is that the Royals defy conventional wisdom when it comes to baseball, and I think that's why they've been so successful the last couple of years, is in the playoffs, say, Eddie, give me 97 miles an hour. Just, you know, air out the tank. We got the bullpen to back you up. You give us five innings, 15 outs, we'll be good. Or if you give us 5 2/3, it's great. But over the course of a marathon of a baseball season, you would think that eventually catches up to you. And I look at the Royals through seven games, 1.5 times through the rotation, in essence. You only have one starter that's made it into the seventh inning. Any concern about the workload already put on the bullpen? Because I did the math here today. 26 of the 63 innings, 41% of innings thrown by Royals pitchers have come from your bullpen. Do you have any concerns about that, or is that just something that's going to improve over the season?
I think it'll improve over the season. Part of that is it's still, you know, this is like an extension of spring training. Mm-hmm. These guys are still building up their endurance. So I don't think, you know, I think if all those guys were right, I don't think Ned would allow them to go into the seventh and eighth inning. And in order to keep the bullpen sharp, they have to pitch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's to get them in a game, as long as you're not overworking them, you know, you're keeping them at the top of their game. So when they come on in a one-run game, or if someone like Luke Hochaver comes on in the middle of the inning and he has no room for error, you know, he's sharp because he's been throwing. I like the rotation. I think it's fine. I think it's plenty to win the division. I do believe that they have to step up this year and throw more innings.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they can't continue the pace that you're talking about. The Royals just don't line up with sabermetrics. It's just there are a lot of things that just don't make sense with this team. They, you know, the Pecota thing, and not just the Pecota calculation, but others too. You know, the ones that are numbers based don't like the Royals. You plug the numbers into the computer, and there's a reason. And remember, when they plug it into the computer, somebody put this program together based on history. You know, here's what a team needs historically to be
yeah.
a winning team.
Mm-hmm.
And the Royals just don't add up in those categories. But there's not a lot of emphasis on the impact of the bullpen. There's not a lot of emphasis on defense. And the reason why there's not a lot of emphasis on the impact of a bullpen is because, you know, the old school way of thinking with pitching is that your starting pitching has to lead the way. They have to throw a lot of innings. And, you know, the old saying that a rested bullpen is a good bullpen. And I think that's still true. I think rested individuals make a good bullpen. But what Ned Yost did last year is he used his bullpen, as far as innings go, you know, more than anybody in the American League, and yet he spread out the workload.
Yes.
I think of the top 23 individuals in innings pitched, relievers last year in the American League, the Royals only had three, which is pretty remarkable when the group threw the most innings. So, you know, in some ways, you know, Ned has found a way to manage that, to use his bullpen a lot, and also to keep guys rested. Another thing to remember, too, is that, you know, the Royals played very well at home last year. They had the third best home record. So if they're winning games in nine innings, every home win that they had in nine innings, they're going to pitch one more inning than the opponent, because the opponent's not going to pitch in the bottom of the ninth inning because there is no bottom of the ninth
inning.
Right. So those numbers are skewed a little bit, but I think the moral of the story is, and that's why they spent all the money on Ian Kennedy, is that they do have to chip in some more innings. The Royals are going to do the best that they can to avoid a postseason hangover, and they've had two extra months to the regular season the last 2 years. And people closely connected to the Giants will tell you that it's you know, the fact that the Giants have won and then not made the playoffs, and then won and then not made the playoffs, and then won and then not made the playoffs. I mean, they have not even gone to the playoffs
right. In
the years in between their World Series. But that World Series, that postseason hangover, that's for real. That's not an accident. And so, you know, in order to avoid that this year, I think you'll see Ned rest guys, position players a little more. But to your point, Wade, yeah, I think the starting rotation's fine. But at the same time, they do need to turn in more innings.
A couple things here. One, the bullpen, to me, I don't know if you agree, but depth-wise with the bullpen, I think the Royals have a better bullpen than they did on opening day a year ago. And granted, we didn't know what Ryan Madsen was going to do as of opening day a year ago, and he had a great season. But that's saying quite a bit, because Greg Holland was the closer and Davis was the eighth inning guy a year ago. But I look at Duffy in the bullpen. I look at Hochaver now, obviously was just coming back from Tommy John surgery a year ago. Would you agree with that the Royals' bullpen might be deeper or maybe more quality in the bullpen and has a little bit more flexibility for Ned compared to last year?
Yeah, I think time will tell if it's better, but I think the key word is it's deeper. I mean, there, you know, you can have Wade Davis needing a night off, and you can throw in, you know, Soria in there with, you know, all the saves he has in his career. Soria might need some rest, and Herrera can pitch the eighth, and Hochaver could pitch the seventh. So, yeah, and then if you get into a position where, you know, your starter has to come out early, you've got Dylan Gee, who's basically a starter, Chin-Ming Wong, who's basically a starter, can give you innings there. And as you pointed out, Danny Duffy, and who knows, Danny Duffy might eventually be in that whole Hochaver, Herrera, Soria mix, mm-hmm. where if Ned needs to, you know, use him in the seventh or the eighth inning. So I think it's a much deeper bullpen. You know, comparing it to 14 and 15, we usually get caught up in the, you know, how important the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings are, and those are the most important innings when you have a lead. But I think, you know, potentially, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth innings. Yeah, this might be the deepest and the most talented bullpen the Royals have had during this run.
Voice of the Royals, Ryan Lefevre, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. Salvador Perez, we had you on the last couple of years, and we've asked you, you know, who's the most valuable player? And without me even getting through the question, you automatically said Salvador Perez. Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring his name up is there's certainly been a lot of discussion with Salvi with the new contract, long-term investment by the Royals, and all the beating that he takes behind the plate, that the Royals need to find opportunities to spell Salvador Perez and not wear him out, and then hopefully have something in the tank if you do make it to October again. What are your thoughts on that, and is there a number, I don't know if there's necessarily a number in mind, but 142 games is what he played in a year ago. Do you think that's maybe blown out of proportion a little bit? Because our sports director, him and I had this discussion yesterday, and he said, you know, he's still a young player. He wants to play. He is your best player at that position. And, yeah, you probably will rest him on a day game after a night game on occasion. But do you think that is a warranted concern for the Royals, or is it maybe a little bit blown out of proportion in regards to Salvi getting so much rest?
Well, some guys are just wired to play every day. I mean, their body can just absorb it. Alcides Escobar is that way. But he's built like a long-distance runner, and Salvi is not. But Salvi's very athletic. He takes care of himself. His body responds. So I don't know if there's a number attached to it. I think they're just going to go day by day and week by week. Ned really relies a lot on Pedro Grifol, who is his catching coach, but really another bench coach. He and Don Wakamatsu are the ones that Ned consults the most during the game. Pedro is, he's bilingual. He's of Spanish heritage, and so, he connects well with Salvador. And so Ned just kind of relies on Pedro, and Pedro understands the responsibility to keep good communication with Salvi and make sure that he's healthy so that when the Royals get into September and October that, you're getting the best of Salvador Perez, you're not getting a worn-out Salvador Perez. So, I understand now why Ned scoffs at that question, how many games you want him to play, because, you can't attach a number to it because
right.
you just don't know. And if, for instance, the game on Monday, the Astros have a big lead in the later innings and Ned took him out for a few innings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not quite having the whole day off, but it's three more innings where he's not going in and out of a crouch and, he's not thinking about the next pitch. He can let his mind and he can let his body relax. When Tony Pena was manager of the Royals, it was interesting. Tony said that he would always find time to give his catchers a day off right before an actual. So he'd give his catcher a game off prior to a day off when the entire team was off. And he told me that, one day off is a mental break, but if you really want a physical break because of, a catcher going in and out of a crouch as many times as he does, that you really need 2 days off. And so... again, that goes back to not attaching a number to it, because I think it's what it's going to boil down to at the end is like, how many days off did he have? How many times is Ned able to take him out of a game early? And so, if you count last night, like having a third of the game off, well, if he does that, 10 times, that's the equivalent of having, three games off or whatever. So,
right.
Having Salvador Perez at the top of his game and not, struggling in September into the postseason like he did a couple of years ago because he played every single game. I think they learned from that. But it's hard. Ed'll tell you it's hard. He writes out that lineup and he thinks, Salvi needs a day off, and he gets to that spot where he has to, write in ink on the official lineup card who his catcher's gonna be, and he almost needs someone else to take the pen away from him and, put in Drew Butera. But the Royals have all the faith in the world in Drew Butera, and I think people outside the organization are more concerned inside the organization. I think it's just because Salvi's so big-bodied that he looks like somebody who needs a rest. But, inside of Salvador Perez's big body is a triathlete.
Yes.
His overall body conditioning doesn't fit his outward appearance.
Yordano Ventura tonight against Scott Feldman, the game three of the four-game set in Houston. Ventura, kind of mixed bag, 5 innings, 2 runs, but he walked 6. And I know a lot of people pointing at Ventura saying he's the key to the rotation. If he can develop into a number one or two starter consistently, then who knows what the Royals could do this year. Ventura getting the start tonight in Houston, your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I think he's still just finding himself. And I think he's probably been at his best when he was more off the radar than right in the center of the radar. And, he had to go through a lot last year. He pitched a brilliant game in Game 6 of the World Series to get the Royals to Game 7. He shows up in spring training. He finds out he's the opening day starter. He gets a 5-year contract. He had to deal with some cramping in his hand and, that opening day start when he just crumpled to his knees and he thought, oh my gosh, what happened to him? He just had a cramp in his thumb, and then the suspensions with the incidents with the A's and the White Sox, and then he actually goes on the disabled list, and then they send him down to the minor leagues and he never really went. So that was, and then he did finish strong. He finished strong after the so-called demotion. And now, he's along the way, he's made some tweaks in his mechanics that really haven't benefited him. So he's kind of going back to the basics, and so I think he's still finding himself, and he has the luxury of doing that because Edinson Volquez is on the team, and Ian Kennedy's on the team, and Chris Young is on the team. That he doesn't really need to be the guy right now. It'd be nice if he turned into be the guy, but I think trying to be the guy before it was ready, that process was ready, that time was upon us, hurt him. And so I think for now it's good for him to step back and be the number three guy. And the time will come when the Royals really need him to be a number one or number two type of a guy. But, you know, that time is not right now. And, you know, thankfully the Royals are in a position where they can allow him to continue to grow, because I think he's going to be just fine.
Patience is a virtue, as I'm sure you've heard, and the Royals were patient with Alex Gordon, Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, Aceytis Escobar. No reason to doubt the Royals just have to have some patience, perhaps, with Yordano Ventura. I know you love this part of the show. This is when early in the year when we have you on, I ask your prediction. Now, here's the thing. Last year, you were awesome, and if I would have taken your advice and went to Vegas, I might not be here right now. You said the Royals would have the division wrapped up before the final road trip to Minnesota, and right you were, and that's after a tough September. The Royals cruised the division title. Are you feeling that confident again this year, or do you have a different type of vibe with the Royals in 2016?
I still think they're going to win the division, and to be honest, I haven't looked at the schedule. I think we finish at home, or I don't even know. Do we finish on the road? There was a time where I could tell you where we were going to be almost every day of the season, and now you know I have to remind myself where we're going to be on the next road trip. I think they're going to win the division, but I think it's going to be a lot closer. And I tell people, because you know you're not the only one who asked me for predictions.
Sure.
I really did believe the Royals were going to win the division. I thought they'd win it by, you know, three or four games. I did think that they would have it wrapped up before they went into Minnesota, but I didn't think they're going to win it by 12 games. And some of that had to do with Detroit and Cleveland were just, you know, very disappointing and didn't contend like a lot expected them to. I think Detroit's going to be better. I think Cleveland's going to be better. I think Chicago will be better. I'm not buying into the hype. I'm not buying into the fantasy baseball approach to them improving just because they put, you know, better players on the team. You know, you take a player and his WAR was whatever, and you add it to the White Sox, and you go, oh, they're going to win four more games just because his WAR was better. Well, sometimes that works, and sometimes it doesn't work. And I just think there's too many new pieces in the last two or three years on that team where I just don't see it coming together. I could be wrong. But I think the Royals will win the division, but I think it's going to be tighter, and I'm going to go back with the other part of my prediction from last year where I was wrong. I said the Royals would win the division, and it would be the Royals and the Indians at the top of the division, and I'm going to stick with that. I think the Royals will win the division this year, and I think it's going to be Cleveland in second place.
In case you need to know, the Royals finished three games at home against the Twins, three games at home against the Indians. Final road trip, Cleveland for three, and then at Detroit for three, September 25th.
Well, let's go back to back years. The Royals will win the division, and it will be wrapped up before their final series with Minnesota.
All right, I like it. That's consistent.
This year it'll be at home. Last year it was on the road.
Deja vu all over again. I like it. I hope that ends up being the case, no doubt. Okay, time for off-the-wall questions before we let you go. Did you and your wife fill out NCAA tournament bracket?
No. My wife is just figuring out that March Madness means it's the NCAA tournament time. So,
are you saying your wife's not a big sports fan?
She's a zero sports fan.
Wow, that sounds like my wife.
Yeah, my wife, you know, before we had kids, she'd visit me on the road quite a bit. Our first couple of years of marriage, we'd always find a city where she'd come visit me where there was a day game or a day off so we could go out to dinner and see the city. And I could show her all these places that I've been traveling to. And she'd want to go to one game just to see what the stadium was like and the vibe of the crowd. And so I'd have a general idea of where she was sitting. And she'd come wandering down the stairs in about the fourth or the fifth inning. And she'd sit down. And then I'd see her get up and walk around. And then when the game was over, she'd come up to the booth. And we'd go back to the hotel together. And I'd say, you know, what'd you think of the stadium? Oh, it was nice. And, boy, they have really good, whatever, hot dogs here. Their French fries were great. And I was like, oh, good. And then she'd say, did we win? So that's my wife.
Well, I asked that question because my wife's not a big sports fan either. But my 9-year-old and myself, of course, as you know, we're rabid sports fans. And my 9-year-old always asked me, who's going to win the game? Who do you think's going to win the game? And so we did the NCAA tournament bracket challenge here at the radio station. And out of all the brackets, and I fill one out and I never do great at it, I overanalyze it, think too much. And my 9-year-old kind of is doing the same thing, chip off the old block. My wife filled one out this year, and Ryan, she was the only one out of all of the people that entered our radio contest to pick Villanova to win it all. She was the only one. And so I asked her, I said, well, how did you come to that conclusion? We had her live on the show just to have some fun with it. I said, you know, my son's been asking the wrong person who is going to win. I said, why did you pick Villanova? And she, I'm paraphrasing here, but it just sounded good off the tongue. Whatever name rolls off the tongue, Villanova.
I thought she was going to say she liked their uniform.
No, we were scared she was going to say that too. And then she tried to say it was a complicated process. She goes, well, you know, I look at the rankings or whatever. And it's like, yeah, okay, yeah, okay, right, rankings, whatever. It's called seeds, but it's all right.
Right.
So that's why I asked you that. But sometimes you overthink it, and that's why I always have my wife fill the bracket out. She almost always does better than me. Second off-the-wall question, what's the toughest name for you to spell or word to spell? The reason I bring this up is because every single time I have you on the show and I want to type up, hey, you know, Ryan Lefevre is going to be the voice, he is the voice of the Royals. He's going to be on our show, and I want to throw it on our Facebook page or whatever. I always have to think quite a bit and try not to cheat and try not to look up your name to spell it correctly. But now I believe I have finally nailed it. So my question to you, is there a name or a word that you have a hard time spelling that just stops you all the time?
Oh my gosh, I don't know.
You're a good speller.
I'm trying to think of a name. We used to laugh. Paul Splittorff could not say Encarnacion. He'd get stuck somewhere between na and C, and he'd say it always Encarnacion. There's always that little like when you're starting your car on a cold winter morning, you know, kind of get stuck in there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's one. I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I know that there's a. Gosh, there was a team in spring training this year who. Well, maybe I'll think about it with the next question. But there is a name that I have to hesitate before I spit it out.
Archie Diacono is a tough name to say. I finally mastered that for Villanova. That was tough. Even the big league announcers, the guys on CBS had problems with that one. Final question for
Chesler
you.
Chesler Cuthbert is a tough one.
Yeah.
It's so easy to want to say Chester.
Yes, it is.
Chesler.
Yes.
Chesler Cuthbert.
Yeah, say that 10 times in a row, and good luck with that.
Yeah, you got to be very careful when you say that name.
And the Royals have all kinds of promotional giveaways this year. The World Series replica trophy in a couple weeks on April 23rd when they play Baltimore. They've had lots of bobblehead dolls over the years. I want to know, when are we going to get – Denny Matthews even had a bobblehead, for crying out loud. I've got it on my shelf down in the basement. When are we going to get the Ryan Lefevre bobblehead doll? When? Everybody wants it.
Well, let me tell you, first of all, Denny was going into one of the Hall of Fames when they gave his away, whether it was the Royals Hall of Fame or Cooperstown. I don't remember which one. So I've got a ways away from that. And, you know, this is actually a good thing that we're a long ways away from a Ryan Lefevre bobblehead, because that means there aren't enough players on the field to promote that you have to go so far as to, well, how about we do one of the broadcasters this year? So... This is a good thing that my bobblehead has not been a consideration. You'll just have to look at the real live bobblehead on television every night.
You know, I've got a great idea. You can pass this along to the Royals, and then they can send the royalties to me. And that is, they need to come up with a Rex Hudler bobblehead, but it talks. Check, please, go through all his things. You know, moon is a planet, all that stuff.
Yep.
You know, just hit the button like a Mickey Mouse doll, and it says four or five different things. I'm telling you, that would be a big seller, no doubt.
Well, they make them. The Denny one, I think, has a few calls, doesn't it?
That does. Oh, well, the one I have doesn't, but I must have got ripped off.
No, it does. Your battery's dead.
Oh.
But the Denny one changed the battery.
Oh.
Denny, I think, has a few calls on it. There's a little button there on the base of it. Yeah.
Oh. Wow.
And by the way, I have Denny's bobblehead in my home office as well.
Well, I can't wait till they make one of you. That would be great. Hey, Ryan, we appreciate the time as always, and safe travels back from Houston when the series is over, and the road trip is over, I should say, because you got another road trip after Houston. And we appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again later on in the season, man.
Okay, Wade. Good to talk with you, too.
That's Ryan Lefevre, the voice of the Royals, here on The Sports Ticket.